Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. With Gary D'Amato, I am Rob Hernandez. It is Friday, folks. That means it's time for Talking.Golf here on Wisconsin.Golf. And Gary D'Amato, I tell you what, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. I just got back from a Jimmy Buffett tribute concert. Looked like the two lead singers, Tom Halla, our good friend from Nagawaki, and Chuck Delsman, who spent a lot of time at Nagawaki watching his son, Charlie, good former colleague of ours. But it is great to be at Friday because it's been a long week, but it's been a fun week. And it all kind of revolved around the Wisconsin State Open at Black Wolf Run in Pine Hills in the Sheboygan area. And I tell you what, we expected a great State Open and we got a great State Open.
Yeah, we really did, with a wild final round. The cream rose to the top. You know, we had Pearson Hunt, who was the leader going to the final day, University of Illinois, everyone knows who he is. And Harrison Ott, I think everyone knows who he is. Clearly the two best amateurs in the state right now, jockeying with some other really good players. And Harrison Ott emerged victorious. I went back through the scorecard, and that final threesome on the final round combined for 18 birdies, two doubles, a quad, and seven bogeys. So it was just wild. When they made birdies, it was spectacular, and there were some flameouts, you know, that were unfortunate, but it was a good final round, and Harry Ott wins his back-to-back State Open championships.
You know, I know when I've talked to Harry in the past, you know, having covered him extensively as a junior golfer, and when you covered Harrison Ott as a junior golfer, you didn't just cover Harrison in what he did on the golf course, but you covered the reputation that Harrison Ott had among his peers, and everyone thought this guy was destined for greatness. He's got one more year left at Vanderbilt, and every year that we've watched him here since he's gotten to Vanderbilt, he's gotten better and better. I think there were some people who weren't sure he'd fit in, survive, thrive at Vanderbilt because he had his ups and downs as a junior golfer. Sometimes, you know, he might not have ascended to the expectations in that given year that others had for him, but he kept working. You've seen him, working with, at the range and away from the limelight. And this is a guy who is absolutely as talented as we've seen come through here. And now with two State Open victories as an amateur, that's epic stuff.
And what I like about these guys, Rob Harrison, Pearson Hunt, Sam Anderson, Jordan Hahn, we can name another half dozen or dozen guys. They're all very focused, very mature. They handle themselves so well. Pearson, very disappointing final round and finishes seven shots back when he had the lead starting the day. But as you saw, Rob, when we interviewed him, couldn't have been more gracious, had a smile on his face. You know, golf's very, very important to him, but he's got things in perspective, as does Harrison and all these guys. And it's really, as Harrison said at the end of his interview, Rob, it's a really good crop of Wisconsin golfers right now, and I would second that.
We'll talk about the format and the future of the State Open in a few minutes, Gary. But, the 36-hole finale is unique to the State Open in terms of 72-hole tournaments of that nature. Obviously, the Ray Fisher has a 36-hole final that a lot of the amateurs, get a taste of each year. But if this had been a 54-hole tournament, there's a good chance that Pearson Hunt would have won it. He really didn't start to stumble until the 16th hole of his third round, where he took an 8 on a par 5. I was there to see the carnage. I was there to look for the golf ball. And that really kind of set him back a little bit, because at that point he had made one bogey in the first 15 holes. He was otherwise 3 under on the day and looked in complete control.
But we've seen this with a lot of the guys that you know go from the high school ranks to the college ranks. It's a process. Pearson Hunt is close to being where Harrison Ott is now. He showed that he was ready at the state amateur, but just didn't quite wasn't able to seal the deal, close the door the final full day. And but I was really impressed with the way he handled himself on the golf course. In addition to support what you said about the way he talked afterwards. He never ever showed any anger out there when things were going rough.
Yeah, one shot at a time. He said he's been working really hard on not thinking ahead, on focusing on the results or what could or couldn't happen. Staying in the moment may be better than he ever has. And that's so important, Rob, as you know, when they get to the next level, you've got to stay in the moment. You can't be thinking about money and finishes and all that stuff, or you're never going to get there. And both these guys that we've been talking about have great heads on their shoulders, and in addition to the talent. And really, that's why they're up there winning so many of the tournaments we've seen them win.
One of the guys that I don't want to overlook is a guy who was in contention and really on the heels of whoever was in the lead almost the entire day. I'm not sure Zach Burry of Appleton ever really had the lead. He might have been tied for the lead a couple times, but he's a guy that's a mini tour guy who calls Appleton home now. His dad has been the head pro up at Winnegame in Neenah the last few years, and so he's based out of Appleton but has traveled the country. He kind of took the Dan Woltman circuit this year and played a lot of the state opens, Waterloo, Iowa, Des Moines, or Cedar Rapids, I should say, and has played well and almost pulled it off. Finishes four shots behind Harrison Ott, gets the first place professionals check, and he is one of many guys that will be going on to Q school this fall. Not a big kid, but a guy who keeps getting better and better, and he was a bulldog. He hung in there the whole way.
He did, Robin. Actually, believe it or not, midway through that final round or after six or seven holes, he had a three-shot lead. He birdied three holes in a row. Harrison got off to a little bit of a slow start, and Pearson got off to a bad start in that final round, hitting a ball, a lost ball on the first hole and a double bogey. So Burry actually led by three shots, I think six holes into the final round. But then he made three bogeys in a four-hole stretch, and then Harrison started making birdies and flipped the leaderboard. But, yeah, you're right. I didn't know much about Zach Burry until the state opened, but I watched him that whole final round, and this guy can play. So we're going to be hearing a lot more from him in the future.
Yeah, and I think it's a good lesson for the young golfers that are out there that are trying to get to be the next Zach Burry or Sam Anderson. In that final group, you had Zach Burry out of Illinois State and Pearson Hunt out of Illinois. Again, the golf ball doesn't know, you know, which bag you're carrying for which school. And clearly, Zach Burry has come a long way. And he told me as much, since his days at Illinois State. And, again, the journey in professional golf sometimes can be a marathon and not a sprint. And, he continues to get better. And I thought this was another step for him. So we will continue to follow him through the Korn Ferry Tour qualifying series here coming up, at the end of this month and into September. Sam Anderson doesn't have to go to pre-qualifying. In fact, he's going to spend the next 4 weeks up on the Mackenzie Tour, PGA Tour Canada. And after a great round of 66 in the first round, which really, until Zach Burry's 63 at Pine Hills, Sam Anderson's was again, one of the one of those rounds that tells you what it takes to be a professional golfer. He had 2, 4, 5, 8 birdies in a round of 66 over at Pine Hills the first day. And, he told me that's typical of what you got to do out on the mini tours, make a lot of birdies so you can withstand the bogeys, but you're always kind of taking a little bit of a more of a risk in trying to be aggressive, but that's the mindset you have to have. And again, Sam Anderson, I think this is 3 straight top 5 finishes for him in a state open. And he continues to knock on the door. And I think we're going to hear a lot from this guy. He's physically and fundamentally gifted.
Yeah, absolutely. Sam is. Jordan Hahn tied for 6th. Peter Webb tied for 6th. Kaylor Steger tied for 8th. All these guys are chasing the dream. They're all young professionals. They're all improving. Kaylor Steger won the Racine County Open by a bunch of shots a week or so before the state open. The world, is their oyster. All these guys, I think, are going to – you never know which one of those group is going to make it all the way, but I would say that they all at least have a shot.
And before we jump on at the amateurs, two other mini-tour guys, Pat Stolpe, former Oostburg golfer, now playing out of Scottsdale, Just had a bad third round, and he was right there, and he's going to be going to the first stage qualifier for the Corn Ferry Tour in La Quinta, California. And George Kneiser out of Oconomowoc, 71 in a tough 76 finish. They finished T11, so a lot of depth there. Two amateurs, or actually three amateurs, Gary, I wanted to ask you about. Adam Miller out of Nakusa. He's a caddy at Sand Valley, the state champion back in 2015 at Lodi High School in Division II. Finishes fifth. He was runner-up at the state amateur. And when Joe Stadler said that this kind of clinched player of the year, I go, are you serious? And I went back and looked. It's not just clinching player of the year for in the WSGA. It's a runaway. I mean, and again, you got to play most of the events to score a lot of points. And Adam Miller has done that. But he is a very much a quiet assassin on the amateur ranks. It remains to be seen. I think it was Andy Landenberger who told me that that Adam came up the final day and says, you know, can I play as a professional? And they said, no, you got to do that as a, you know, at the start of the tournament. I don't know if professional golf is in Adam's future. He's done a great, you know, he's got a great thing going as a caddy up at Sand Valley, clearly in his golf game, but I never would have expected Adam Miller to be your player of the year in WSGA. And he's about 1,000 and about 1,500 points ahead of Jack Schultz. And Jack hasn't had too shabby of a year either.
No, yeah, that we looked at each other when Joe said that about Adam being virtually locking up player of the year, because it surprised me too. But then again, it didn't. I mean, he had a great state amateur, had a chance to win that tournament. He played in the U.S. amateur the week before the state open, and then he has a top five finish in the state open. So here's a young man who's clearly getting better and better. A couple of years ago, I don't think I saw his name too often near the top of tournaments. And all of a sudden, he's a presence on the leaderboard. So he's putting all that knowledge he's gaining as a caddy at Sand Valley to use, I think.
I think so. And we've seen it with a lot of the caddies. Charlie Delsman was T16 again. You know, Max Hosking, who's caddied in the desert and back here, you know, also T16. So caddying isn't such a bad gig if you want to get better as a player. And you make pretty good money at it, too, folks. Another guy, just to mention quickly, low round in the final round of the final day, Hunter Eichhorn, the Marquette golfer out of Kearney, Michigan. As I went back and did the report card for the final day, I found it absolutely incredible that Hunter Eichhorn, after a pair of 71s, starts the day in 13th place, Gary. He shoots a 79 in the third round, drops to 40th, and that 67 gets him right back into a tie for 13th place. What are the mathematical odds of that happening, shooting the exact numbers to stay in the same position when it's 79-67? That was wild, but he is Mr. Final Round. He had a great final round at the State Am over at Westmore, and what a great way to springboard into Marquette season.
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to talk to Hunter all week. I know you probably talked to him a couple times. I wondered what happened in that 79, because he opened with a pair of 71s, was in real good shape going into the final day. And, you know, you turn that 79 into a third 71, and all of a sudden, boom, he's right in the final group and in contention. So not sure what happened in that third round, but the Hunter Eichhorn I know showed up in the fourth round for sure.
Yeah, and I think he's a lot closer where he wants to get than he was perhaps at the start of the summer. And, you know, COVID took a hit on a lot of things over the last year and a half. And I'm hoping that we see a focused and kind of a happy Hunter Eichhorn getting ready for the next stage of his golf career as a fifth-year senior at Marquette this fall. Griffin Barella and Cameron Huss also tied with Hunter Eichhorn. A couple of Badger golfers, which tells you it's going to be a great year for the Badgers under new coach Mike Wilson. And a real solid state open. Gary, before we get off the state open topic, a couple other things to talk about. I did have a chance to talk to Dan Woltman. Quite possibly the state open will be his final golf tournament. It was his first and final of the year. A new dad. He's looking to get out of touring as a professional at age 34. He's trying to figure out what's next. There a lot of things, could be in his future, whether it be a teaching pro, whether it be a club pro, whether it be, trying to take all the experience that he's had with all those pro-ams that they play on the professional level and take it to the next level. But boy, what a run for Dan Woltman. He's played in Europe. He's played on the Corn Ferry Tour, just never quite got that Corn Ferry season where he could get out on the PGA Tour. But he's got four state open victories, and he certainly has made a name for himself in the professional ranks.
Bob, I know that eventually he's going to, whatever he does, he's going to be successful. Very smart young man. And I have a feeling he's going to be back in contention, at least in the state open on an annual basis. I think he'll gear up for that one. I'm sure he really is burning to win a fifth state open and join the three guys, I believe, who have won five. And I don't think we've seen the last of them, but maybe priorities are shifting a little bit. And that's, you know, that's probably a good thing now with a young family and young child.
It's he would become the fifth, Francis Guyette, and Bobby Brew, Manuel De La Torre, Steve Stricker, the other four. That's great company. And to your point on maybe kind of approaching the game of golf from a different angle will rub off. One of the things that we did talk about was how he played in the final group, the final day in 2013, when a guy named Jim Lemon won the state open about a year or two after he had given up his career on the Canadian tour. And then all of a sudden, you know, he was about to get married and kind of settle down in Madison. And he won that state open title 8 years ago. And of course, this week we lost Jim Lemon to pancreatic cancer at the age of 43. It really sent ripples through the state open when that news made the rounds. Gary, you talked to a lot of people. I talked to a lot of people. A popular champion, a popular human being, Jim Lemon. And absolutely a tragedy to lose that guy at the age of 43.
Yeah, very, very, very sad news, a sad development during the week. And a lot of the guys were very well spoken in the field about what he meant to the tournament, what he meant to golf in Wisconsin. Just a very, very good person, in addition to being a great golfer. And the Wisconsin golf community is really going to miss him.
And you had a chance to cover that 2013 State Open at Tuckaway. I was not there. What do you remember about the way he won that and the surprise that accompanied, you know, that victory? Because I don't think you would have had Jim Lemon on your, win place or show maybe at that stage in his career to come out and win a State Open. It was a pretty good field he was up against.
Yeah, if I remember right, it was a while ago, but I think he outdueled maybe Ryan Helman and down the stretch.
Yep.
And Ryan was, you know, at his peak, you know, and winning just about everything back in that time period. And I remember Jim was very, very grateful that he was in a position to win that tournament and that he was able to finish it off. Because as you said, he had left touring golf behind, you know, a couple of years earlier. Some people might have said it was maybe a little bit of a surprise, but certainly wasn't to people who follow golf closely, because Jim always had a lot of game.
Lemon, in our thoughts and prayers here, and especially his wife Kate and young son Maxwell, Jim Lemon, the former state open champion, former Badger golfer, and a state champion at Madison West as well, won the individual title back in 1995. That was the most recent of the 15 state championships won by Madison West as a team. At one point they were dueling Jack Nicklaus's alma mater over there at Upper Arlington High School in Ohio. For the most nationally, but what a legacy left by Jim Lemon. That's what's up here on Talking.Golf. Forgot to mention that, Gary. What's up, powered by our Instagram account at wis.golf. Megan Augustine was a busy person this week, as both Jim Kelch and I feeding her some of those great photos. And I tell you what, if you didn't see some of the stuff that Jim Kelch had this week, one of the things that stood out, and I think it made it on Instagram, was at the end of the final round on the 18th hole, as the golfers were leaving the green, absolutely the most beautiful buck we've ever seen comes up out of the Sheboygan River and takes a look. I'm not sure if that was, I know Jim Lemon was more of a fisherman than a hunter, but boy, it was sure something magical to see that at a great venue like Black Wolf Run. And as we segue to what's next, powered by our @wis.golflive Twitter handle, one of the things I'd like to touch on briefly, Gary, is what's next for the state open. I mean, Black Wolf Run and Pine Hills teamed up to put on an absolutely outstanding state open with the expanded 204 player field. But next year it's at Ozaukee Country Club. Talking to Joe Stadler, the tournament is poised to go back to 156 players in one site. Let's start with that. What do you think of the expanded field? It's a couple times now you've been able to cover it in its bigger format at Lake Geneva 2 years ago and now up in Sheboygan. With those two courses, what's your opinion? Is it something you like to see on an annual basis?
It is, Rob. I really like it. I like the fact that because the field is split, instead of 156 players, there's what, 100 and is it 104 at each course? I don't know. My math is very good.
Now you're putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
We're exposing our mathematical prowess or lack thereof.
Yeah.
But 102 at each course, Gary.
102. Okay. So they play quicker. The rounds seem to go faster. I don't know why that final round took so long, Rob. The final round was slow. The course played, I think, about 300 yards longer than it had the day before. So that probably had something to do with it. And the wind blew a little bit more until the end of the day when it really calmed down. But I do like the two course. I like the format. I like the fact that it brings a lot more guys into the field. Some might argue that the bottom part of the field, not that they're not deserving, but they're not, they can't keep company with the guys at the top, certainly, but that's the case in every tournament. So I do like the two course, bigger field. How about you?
I agree. I think everybody who was anybody got into the field. There were a couple of rare exceptions and a couple of those guys not only went through the regular qualifier, but also missed it the last chance. So in terms of the 204, I don't think, there were many of the golfers who have been having good years that weren't in the field. And then as we looked at the cut, as we got ready for the final day, you look at the top 60 in ties and it was a who's who. I mean, one of the ironies was that it's been a great year for junior golf in Wisconsin and not a single golfer who will be in high school this coming year made the cut. The only one who I think that I saw that was in high school last year was Ty Kretz, who's going off to South Dakota State. And he snuck in, I think, right on the cut line. We're so deep in our mini tour golfers. We've got a great crop of club professionals in the state. Joe Leonard, by the way, your low club professional. He's the director of instruction at the Oaks Golf Course in Cottage Grove and is starting to play a little bit more. He's got himself in some tremendous shape and that part of it's good. And of course the amateur ranks with the college golfers. We've talked about it before on this podcast, Gary. This is the golden era of college golf in Wisconsin. And right now I think you got to step back and appreciate, Thomas Longbella turned professional this week. Nate Thompson out of Greendale turned professional this week. So they're leaving the college ranks, but then you get guys like, Pearson Hunt, who's young in his career at Illinois, and Harrison Ott, Hunter Eichhorn, all those guys at Marquette, all the guys at Wisconsin. We're impressed by Cameron Huss, continues to be in the conversation. Didn't have a great final day, but, two real solid first rounds. So I think you need to keep it, expanded. But, for now, I think my gut tells me that they're going to go back to, I think it'd be good maybe to go back to 156 for one more try and see what you miss. And then talk about maybe pairing up Century World in 2 years with Stevens Point Country Club, like you did this year with Black Wolf Run and Pine Hills. You'd have a classic course that's been redesigned a little bit. Pine Hills with their new look 18th hole was fantastic. And then, you'll have a course that nobody really knows right now, in Century World, because it's been undergoing a redesign and hasn't had a major competition in quite some time. So I agree. I think an expanded field would be great.
Yeah. And obviously we can't do it every year because, as you said, Ozaki next year, it's sometimes hard to pair up a course with the primary course, but I think when the opportunity is there to go to two courses, Geneva National up here with Black Wolf Run and Pine Hills, as you mentioned, possibly Stevens Point Country Club and Century World. When there are opportunities there to do it, I'm all for doing it.
Absolutely. On what's next, Gary, just to recap our little conversation about golf cars from last week. And again, you'll notice that golf carts snuck into the headlines. We're going to see if Mike Davis, who does all of our headlines, catches the whole discussion. Golf cart, golf car. The people who sell them are adamant that they're golf cars. You and right. I are traditionalists. I've always rented a cart. I've never rented a car. I rented a car. I'll rent a car when I come back for the Ryder Cup, but I will not rent a cart. So now we've totally confused that part of the conversation. Gary, the big winner was the Yamaha gel battery golf cart. So it just got delivered today. We took it down to the Buffett concert and it's quiet. It's sleek. I can't wait to get it on a golf course. And I have to admit though, I kind of feel like George Costanza's parents from Seinfeld. This is another step towards being just old and over the hill.
You're living the life, Rob. I'm envious. Tooling around in your brand new golf car or cart, whatever you want to call it, playing golf almost every day. I think you live on a golf course now. I don't know what you did, but Rob, I wish I could have done it. Whatever you did, whatever formula you found, I somehow missed out on.
We're going to get you. We're going to get you here eventually, Gary, because we got to get right. from Killarney down here to Arizona. So we're working on it. But you and I did get a chance. We've got to thank the folks at Kohler Golf for the hosting job that they did, especially the final round. You know, 36 hole finales are not easy, and they still had golfers going out on the river course. And they were nice enough to give us a golf car to go around the expanse that was the Meadow Valleys course. And I don't know if you and I would be upright to do our podcast if it hadn't been for that. And I should mention, and Vince Suter pointed it out, who is the owner of the Suter Ward Group, the head of that, and one of the tournament sponsors. As I was, we were talking golf cars. I talked to a lot of people at the tournament, and he said, "How could you get a Yamaha? You got to get a club car." And to that point, that tight turning radius, especially on hills, is really important. And club car does have the tightest turning radius. And we, of course, got to use club cars all week, and a couple times where we got ourselves in some spots and had to turn around. That turning radius helps, Gary. I don't know if you noticed or not.
I did notice. I also had several very minor incidents in my car on the final day, Rob. That course is a little tough to get around, even in carts, because of the tight turns on the cart path. And, you know, there's a lot of spectators walking, and then there's, you know, 10 or 12 carts following the action. And on the 17T, the par 3, Rob, I don't know if you were around when this happened, but so the final group's getting ready to hit as soon as, and we're up at that little bend where it goes down the hill and around the back of the green.
Right.
So there's like 5 carts in line waiting for the group ahead of the final group to putt out. So then the final group can hit their shots on. And so they putt out. And so we all start this mad dash down the hill. And for some reason, the lead cart puts on his brakes. I locked up my brakes. It sounded like a multi-car NASCAR pileup. And I'm sure those guys back on the tee were going, "What the heck are those guys doing?" But honestly, it wasn't my fault. It wasn't my fault, guys.
Well, and hilly courses are an issue, and I'm still getting used to these brakes are not like as good as the brakes in my car. So I'm going to have to get used to that. And luckily we have more of a flat surface here on our golf course than we did this last week at Black Wolf. So, but good advice for everyone out there in golf cars or golf carts, whatever your preference may be. I know that they're taking golf carts out in the desert this week, Gary, where the LPGA Tour qualifying school is. That's where I will be tomorrow as I take a look and see how Tess Hackworthy, Bobby Stricker, and Emily Lauterbach are doing as it went today. And now, of course, I lose my, there it is, the LPGA Tour qualifying school leaderboard. Two rounds into the 4-round tournament out there at Rancho Mirage, the Dinah Shore course at Mission Inn Resort, as well as the Pete Dye course. And then they go over to Shadow Ridge at the Marriott. And that's where Tess Hackworthy was today. She followed up an opening 71 with a 72. She is currently T48 as they wrap up the second round. Bobby Stricker, competing as an amateur, daughter of Steve Stricker, the Ryder Cup captain. She shoots her best round of the week so far, a 71 to go with a 73 from Thursday, and she is currently T63. And then Emily Lauterbach, a 75 yesterday I believe she was at the Pete Dye course, and then today a 74 at the Dinah Shore course. So she has got some work to do to make the cut. She is currently T177. It is the top 125, and ties go on to Sunday's round, Sunday's finale. Anybody, Gary, who posts a 54-hole score gets at least conditional Symetra Tour status, so that's important. And right now it looks as though that Bobby Stricker and Tess Hackworthy are in good shape to get to that final round. But tomorrow, Bobby Stricker goes to Shadow Ridge. She played at Dinah Shore yesterday. And then I believe Tess Hackworthy moves on to Dinah Shore, which is where they have the ANA tradition. But exciting stuff for two former Badgers, one senior to be in Lauterbach, to be able to compete for LPGA Tour status.
Rob, do we have a certain U.S. Ryder Cup captain on the bag with Bobby Stricker?
Rumor has it he was going to walk along. I'm not sure if he's actually going to be on the bag, but rumor was he was going to be there and make sure that you know, Bobby was able to get to or from without too much worry. I know Izzy Stricker was competing for Wanakee High School this week in a couple tournaments. So it must be divide and conquer for the Stricker family. What an exciting time in their life. Izzy is shot a nice round yesterday. I believe shot 75 down at Foxborough or at the Meadows at Six Mile Creek to win a duel against rival DeForest. And of course, you know, Bobby Stricker with the chance to see, you know, whether she can handle this professional golf stuff. Again, she has the option as an amateur, Gary, of competing in this throughout the whole LPGAQ school as an amateur. So if she doesn't get her full status on the Symetra Tour, she could play a combination of amateur and professional events next year. One thing I talked about with someone at the State Open, you know, if she even gets conditional status and you know, is able to really, you know, at least write for sponsors exemptions, I mean, who's going to turn down Bobby Stricker? Isn't that, wouldn't you be surprised?
I think she'd be able to get in almost whatever she wants to get in. And Bobby, as we've talked about many times on our podcast in recent months, has made great strides. She's had a really good summer tournament scoring wise. She's scoring, you know, she's consistently around par to below par now. You rarely see a 3 or 4 over par score from her anymore. And, you know, that's what it's going to take for her to move on is to keep it around par and get under par.
Well, and that is what's next here, powered by our Twitter handle at @wis.golflive. We apologize to the high school golfers. We, as busy as Gary and I were at the State Open, I didn't have time to be on top of all the results from Monday and Tuesday and into Wednesday, but we're getting caught up. A lot of great stuff happening. Nora Roberts with a 66 in the final round of the Brookfield Central Mequon Homestead Tournament on Tuesday. And so she kind of set a kind of a notice to everybody around the state that she will be a contender at the high school ranks. But you can find all those results on our Twitter handle at @wis.golflive. Of course, our podcast here sponsored by Iron Jock. Comfortable, and it doesn't make you stink when you wear it in weather like we had a little bit this week, on especially on Wednesday. It got a little humid over there, Gary D'Amato, at Black Wolf Run. But I saw Jim Kelch wore his Iron Jock. I saved mine for the ride home on the airplane because, you know, I didn't want to, you know, those tight seats, those tight quarters. I wanted to kind of use that technology to my benefit, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, between our Wisconsin Golf, that golf apparel and the Iron Jock stuff, we're set. We're set for the summer, Rob. We can just go back and forth between the two. We can wear the brand one day, and then we can be super comfortable in that Iron Jock stuff the next day.
Well, and you can be sure that Iron Jock will make an appearance in a month's time at the Ryder Cup as we segue into our final segment here, the Ryder Cup Report, powered by Kohler Golf, our friends that just got done hosting the State Open. They got a month to turn around and get things going in preparation for the Ryder Cup. Gary, I know that on Wednesday, while I was out tailing the last group in the third round, you spent some very valuable time. I know we're going to read about it on Monday in the Sweet Spot, but you went out to Whistling Straits, and it probably didn't look a lot like the Whistling Straits we've come to know and love, except for when they've had the PGA there. But even so, I got to think that the setup for a Ryder Cup might even look a little different than that.
It's pretty impressive, Rob. I would say if I had to put a percentage on it, probably 90% of all the stuff is up. And by that, I mean the corporate chalets, the grandstands. They were still building the grandstand around the 9th and 18th greens. But I tell you what, I walked out to the first tee and looked back at the little amphitheater that's going to be the grandstand that's going to be surrounding that first tee. It's going to hold about 3,500 to 4,000 people. And it is going to be Rob, wait till you see that on Friday morning when they come out and play their first matches. And there's, you know, the Europeans have been drinking since 4 a.m. Some of the Americans probably too. And the sing song stuff that goes back and forth and the cheers and the chants, it's really, it raises goosebumps, Rob. And I, Monday, we're a month away, I believe Monday from our, the initial practice rounds, and Stricker and Padraig Harrington make their first captain's press conferences. So it's coming up quick. The course looks great. The infrastructure's all in place. It looks like we're going to have, you know, a full contingent. You know, originally we were saying 40,000 fans. I don't know if it'll be that big because I think some people are, you know, going to be scared away maybe a little bit by the spike and the surge in the variants. We're still dealing with that stuff, unfortunately, but there's going to be a lot of people there regardless, and it's going to be a great, great atmosphere.
Indeed. And just a couple of things on the potential participants. If you were watching the tournament today, at Liberty National, the first round of the PGA Tour playoffs. Colin Morikawa apparently dealing with a back issue. And so the number one ranked golfer on the Ryder Cup point standings is in a bit of a hurt. But on the flip side, there wasn't anything hotter out in a very hot and humid Liberty National than Jordan Spieth's putter. So he continues to show his resurgence. So, Gary, I guess briefly, how do you juxtapose the potential that, in addition to Brooks Koepka and among others, you know, fighting little nagging stuff here and there, now we might have a back issue with the number one point getter in Colin Morikawa?
Yeah, that's a little bit concerning, I would imagine, to our Ryder Cup captain. But, boy, you look at the scores today, Rob. Jordan Spieth, 62. Brooks Koepka, 64. Xander Schauffele, 62. Justin Thomas, well, 69. He pulled up the rear. Tony Finau, 64. And Europe's best player right now, John Rahm, is leading with a 63-67 start. But it's good to see that all those top American guys, U.S. guys, are playing well. But there are some injury concerns, Rob, and I'm sure Stricker's got his finger on that and is worried, a little bit concerned about with some of these guys. You know, Jordan Spieth had a hand problem. Brooks Koepka's had a little back problem, a knee problem. Some of these guys are dinged up a little bit, but judging by the scores today, most of them are in pretty good shape now.
I tell you what, it was a lot of fun to watch. What are we calling this, the first stage of the playoffs? I know it's the last year of whatever it is. It's the Northern Trust. They're in their sponsorship, apparently. But it was a hoot. There were a lot of these things, like a lot of holdouts. Jordan Spieth hold out from the fairway. A couple guys with multiple eagles on the round. So it was the kind of stuff that we're hoping we see next month at Whistling Straits today. So it'll be fun watching that this weekend. And Gary D'Amato, as I check our PGA Tour Champions leaderboard, Jerry Kelly, back in action this week, and he is currently in after one round of the 567. So talking about fun golf to watch, he is only one shot behind Billy Mayfair, Woody Austin, and Davis Love III at the Boeing Classic in Snoqualmie, Washington. So I'm going to have to figure out if I can get my Golf Channel app on my phone over at I think I'm going to Shadow Ridge tomorrow to follow Bobby Stricker. And because it's going to be fun to watch golf, whether it's in person or on TV here this weekend. And that's what makes our job fun.
Yeah. And, you know, we haven't talked much about Jerry Kelly. You just mentioned him, and he's our very possibly going to be the Champions Tour Player of the Year. You know, he wins this weekend. I think he jumps pretty far in front. So wouldn't that be fun to have a Champions Tour Player of the Year and a Ryder Cup captain, both from Wisconsin in the same year? That'd be pretty cool.
I think they had to invoke the Jerry Kelly rule and add a 13th player to the Ryder Cup. And
yeah,
he would be the guy I would want for the Americans, then Colin Montgomery for the Europeans. Always a guy that I never grew tired of watching in the Ryder Cup competition because he kind of embodied the Ryder Cup on the Euro side. So we'll work on that one. How does that sound?
That sounds good, Rob.
All right. Well, Gary, appreciate you doing the talking here on Talking.Golf. We'll do it again next week.
All right, Rob. Thanks.
All right, for Gary D'Amato, I'm Rob Hernandez, Talking.Golf, sponsored by Iron Jock, our most comfortable sponsor yet. Why is that? Iron Jock is advanced performance gear that infuses pure silver into every piece of apparel through a proprietary process called silver ion technology. This technology kills 99.9% of the bacteria and fungus caused when you sweat, and it does that for the lifetime of the gear. No other brand offers this world-class antimicrobial protection, comfort, and performance. Join Iron Jock Nation and get yours at ironjock.com. That's ironjoc.com. For Gary, I'm Rob. We'll talk golf again next week.